So Daniel Zwerdling is still with us in the studio. And Danny, when people come back from Antarctica, you know, they usually talk about icebergs and they talk about how cold it is. They might talk about penguins. You've just come back there and you're here to talk this week about food in
yep.
Antarctica?
The cooking of Antarctica. Just think about how much you and I mean, how much some people think about what they eat day to day. So imagine now that you're living in the most extreme place on the planet. Meals take on a special power.
You know, I have to admit, I have never thought about the cuisine of Antarctica. So I am interested.
And I hadn't until I went there. So to explain, let's start our food tour just off Antarctica's coast. One afternoon, I joined a scientist named Donald Manahan, and we're actually walking on top of the sea. It's frozen under 6 feet of ice. Manahan's research team is digging a hole through this ice because they're studying how global warming is affecting life underwater. And Lynn, as we're standing there, what do you think this scientist is thinking about? Carbon dioxide emissions?
The future of civilization?
Nope. He's thinking about dinner.
I've never enjoyed food more in my life than I have working in Antarctica.
Lynn, picture the context. There is nothing green on the continent. No trees, no bushes, not a single blade of grass. At the moment, it's 10 degrees below zero with the wind chill. And Manahan says this strange environment can make you feel off balance. So meals are a serious matter.
One of the things that really makes you feel alive is to come out here, do this work in the cold, and then zoom back to the base and have a nice, warm dinner. Yum, yum. One of the things they pay a huge amount of attention to here is the quality of the food, trying to make sure there's a lot of variety, because, you know, it does affect your psychology.
That's why the emotional center of America's main base in Antarctica is the cafeteria.
Hi, whole wheat with Dijon mustard, prime rib, provolone.
The dining hall is in the main building in the middle of the complex. They call it McMurdo Station, and it's, well, it's ugly. The U.S. Navy built most of this base in the 1950s and 60s, and they chose a spectacular setting that looks out at the frozen sea and at an icy mountain range. But then they ruined the view. It's a jumble of corrugated metal buildings and tacky dormitories. They painted everything sickly brown.
Can I get a turkey sandwich on wheat?
About 1,100 people live here during Antarctica's long summer. But only a few hundred are actually scientists. Most of the staff drive bulldozers or fix leaky roofs, or they cook, like Amanda Bell.
I'm trying to remix the chocolate. We made a chocolate glaze of butter, cream, and dark chocolate to put on top of the eclairs. Would you like to try one?
These are the people who keep the place running, so scientists can work in Antarctica at all. The head chef at McMurdo is Sally Ayotte. She's wiry, like a sprinter. In fact, she races to the kitchen past giant deep-fat fryers. Ayotte says the first time she came to Antarctica, it was back in the 1990s. And when she stepped off the plane,
looked around and was like, oh my God, what have I done? It's easy to see that you're just at the bottom of the world. You're in the middle of nowhere.
Ayotte says she got sort of depressed. Everything's upside down in Antarctica. The sun rises once each year. Then it blazes 24 hours a day for months. Then the sun sets only once a year, and it stays dark for months. And most people are basically trapped here. You can't wander far from the base, or you could die. But Ayotte says one day, it suddenly hit her. Everybody else in Antarctica was in the same boat.
You work, you sleep, you eat.
And she realized she could make a huge difference in people's lives just by making them happy when they eat. To show how she and her cooks try to do it, Ayotte takes us on a tour.
So please, of course, step this way, watch your step.
To begin with, it's all you can eat in Antarctica. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There's often an omelet station, and maybe a roast beef station. And there are rows of stainless steel warming trays piled with mountains of food.
We have the chili for lunch today. We have the pub cod with fries.
And there could be spicy shrimp with rice noodles. Grilled mahi-mahi with papaya salsa. If you're a vegetarian, there's mushroom and barley risotto or falafel with tzatziki sauce. Now, this menu might not sound unusual if you were visiting, say, a university in California, but this is the bottom of the world. They get most of their food by ship. The ship makes one delivery per year after the icebreaker clears the way. So most of their ingredients are frozen, canned, or dried. And Ayat says that's a challenge for cooks who train in the States.
A lot of folks that come from restaurants to here are used to dealing with high-quality produce every single day. So learning, experimenting, figuring out ways to work with dehydrated peppers and dry vegetable broth powder and things like that. How do you make a great meal out of ingredients that might not be the norm?
And there are repercussions when they don't pull it off. Ask anybody in the dining room.
He can make or break the morale of the whole station just by the food they serve.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Absolutely.
Mike Ebel is one of the lead maintenance guys. He's sitting at the table with Dave Ackley from Plumbing.
Ask anybody about the food. It's on good food days, the town is happy. On bad food days, we kind of grump around.
Sometimes we all walk away saying, yuck, the cod we got today is pretty good stuff.
Donald Manahan, the scientist, says maybe this isn't the perfect analogy, but mealtime in Antarctica can push people's buttons just like it does in a prison or a nursing home.
There's a feeling of loss of control, and they have to eat whatever shows up that day. And day in, day out, you don't have any control of that. You know, my grandmother, I remember having this conversation with her, and the rest of the family went, oh, she's fine, the food is great, this and the other. And I said, you know, I've just come back from 3 months in Antarctica, and it started to bother me. It starts to get at you. It sounds trivial if you've never been through it, but it's like you're institutionalized.
And occasionally, people lose it. It happened once to Mike Ebel.
I cleared that galley once. I cleared the whole serving area. It was 1994. They curried everything. There was so much curry, curry dessert, curry this, curry that. I just went berserk. They were peeking around the corners at me. Mike, calm down. And all the food and plates got in the way.
By the way, Lynn, despite that embarrassing incident, Mike Ebel has become a valued employee in Antarctica. In fact, government officials just named a small mountain range for him in Antarctica. Ebel Hills, 7,500 feet high.
Oh, that's great. You know, Danny, I know that you and your wife used to write restaurant reviews.
That's right.
So what's your professional critique of the food in Antarctica?
You know, you have to consider that the cooks in Antarctica face crazy challenges, and in view of that, they do very well. On the other hand, Lynn, powdered potatoes can only go so far. So put it this way. When I'd walk into the cafeteria after spending the day on the freezing ice, at that moment, I'd rate the cuisine in Antarctica 4 stars out of 5.
NPR's Danny Zwerdling, thanks so much for being with us. And if you go to npr.org, you'll find a recipe for Danny's favorite dessert in Antarctica, moist Moroccan cake with mint.